Hey, it's the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I am Chris Lorton. I am your host. And my guest today, a young man, nice young man, knew him when, gosh, I think since you were probably in grade school and high school, been good buddies with my two boys, Mike and George. And welcome, Landon Crawford. Welcome, Landon.
Hi, how's everybody doing?
Good, good. Now you, recently, you're still in the Army. You got a few days left, right?
I got about a month left in the Army, but I'm on my, they call it terminal leave.
Uh-huh.
All my leave days built up, so I got to move home a little bit early before my contract ended.
Yeah. And how many years have you been in the Army?
It'll be 8 in January. So 8 years.
8 years. That's crazy. That's, I remember, when you were younger, do you remember coming over and playing basketball over at the house?
Oh, yeah.
We had that basketball. Yeah. I used to love watching you guys. You just...
Yeah, the lines painted.
Oh, yeah. It was
a nice little spot.
It was official, you know. Yeah. The big square board, you know, breakaway rim. You know, you guys had a lot of fun. We play all... well, I had a big light, too, so we could turn on the light and keep the neighbors, you know, awake for many hours, right? Yeah. So, Landon, when did you graduate high school?
I graduated 2015.
Okay. Yeah. And out of high school, did you go straight into the Army?
Or no, what'd you do? I didn't go straight in. I turned 21 in basic training, so I had about 3 years. I was kind of doing odds and ends. I went to a trade school. It wasn't quite working out for me. I needed to grow up a little bit. I think the Army helped me with that.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. I bet it did. So you went to a trade school trying to figure out who you wanted to be. But what made you, what was the turning point or the trick that said, you know what, I'm going in the Army. Mom, Dad, I'm going in the Army.
So I think my story is pretty funny. Is I was bouncing around. I'd gone to Texas and I'd come home again and was just kind of messing around. And then one day I was like, I wanted to work on a boat. It was just a stray thought. I was like, I'll work on a boat.
A boat. What kind of boat?
I didn't have a slightest clue. I didn't know nothing about it. And so I get online. I start looking up boat jobs, right? And come find out it ain't just cut and dry. Oh, here, we're looking for somebody to come help us out on the boat. We'll train you, right? It wasn't like that. And then so I was like, well, whatever. I'm kind of sitting there just thinking about it. And an Army commercial, of all things, comes on.
Army commercial.
I'm not joking. I got caught by an Army commercial. Army commercial comes on, and I'm sitting there with nothing to do. And I was like, you know what? I'll go. I hadn't thought about that in a while. I'll go talk to the recruiter. So I go talk to him. I take all the ASVAB tests and everything, just like the preliminary ones. And then he gets to talking to me, and it comes time to pick jobs. And he's pitching me ideas, and he's like, well, I got this one. It's watercraft operator. He's like, I even never heard about it. And I was like,
that's what I want to be. I was like, I want to be a boat guy.
If the Lord was ever speaking to me, I was like, I had to take it. I was like, all right, sign me up. And I left 3 weeks later.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was pretty quick. It was a turnaround.
Now, you also, my hat is off to you. You're what, 28, 29?
I'm 28.
28.
Yeah.
28, you're married.
Married.
And you have five children?
I have five children.
Five children. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. In today's world, nobody 29 has five children, but you do.
I do. I do have two stepkids. I got two that were implanted in, but they're mine.
Yeah,
But I have three of my own, and we stayed busy.
Yeah. So. Do you enjoy being a father?
I love being a father.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
Do you recommend it to other people your age?
I would recommend it. It shows you a different side of things, and it's nice. It keeps you busy. I like to say that anything you got planned, they tend to make worse, but all your unplanned time is 1,000 times better with children.
Now, you're married, so what's your wife's name?
My wife's name is Kayla Crawford now. She's originally Kayla Brown. She grew up in Texas, and then when she was 13, moved to Colorado, and then she joined the Army when she was 18, and then we met in the Army.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Okay. Where'd you guys meet? I mean, you weren't met in the Army, but at?
She had, like, the same job. I met her on a deployment, and then when we kind of got back, we got to know each other a little bit better. And
And you guys hit it off?
Yeah,
and
a few short months later, she's pregnant, and so then we got married.
That'll happen. Now, just recently, a few days ago, we were talking. We were at the wellness center. You know, you had some time off. I had a little time off in the morning. Oh. And we were talking, and you said that being in the Army, you've traveled a lot. Now, but before I get into that, what was your job, your boat job? What'd you do?
Well, I did a lot of different things because you start out as you're the private. So then I was just a deckhand in the beginning on a 173-foot vessel. We had three real types of vessels. So that was like the middle one. So I was a deckhand on.
That's pretty good. That's bigger than a football field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so I was on that one. And for a while, just a deckhand, odds and ends, tying knots and keeping the boat clean, doing what I'm told.
Uh-huh.
And then came back from, I did a deployment at each level. And then I came back, I was a quartermaster. And that you're in charge of the maps and building up the routes and everything you go, but it's checked upon.
Uh-huh.
And then I came back from there, and then I was given my own boat. It's a 73-foot. They all go in order, 73, 173, 273. So I got a 73-foot boat, and that was my boat.
Your boat.
My boat.
Yeah.
And I was called a coxswain,
yeah.
Which is a fun story. Is on the boat, on the bigger boats, you have a bosun. And bosun, it means lover of boats.
Okay.
And then so didn't I go that. On that smaller boat, and I'm a coxswain. I don't know what it actually means, but you can imagine.
Huh, how about that? Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, the Army named it. You did.
Yeah. Right. So that was mine, and I had like six guys on there. It was fun because it was just a small amount of people, and we'd have to take it out for maintenance runs. So Fridays we'd go out, we'd throw a grill on there sometimes and
I'll be darned.
Take it out to a beach, find us a little hangout for the afternoon, come back in on the clock. Can't beat that. So.
No, you can't beat that.
Yeah.
And you spent some time abroad, some different places, right?
Yeah.
Where did you go first when you went abroad?
First, I got out of training and it was just a couple months later, I went to Kuwait. That was a rotation we had. It was 9 months, and somebody else replaced you. But went to Kuwait. I was a deckhand out there. It was my first taste of out of the States.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was interesting.
So did you sleep on the boat?
We slept on the boat.
Okay, and then you would periodically get to go into town or get on land and
yep.
And what would you do there? You would be your off time then.
It was our off time. They had stuff on base for us. Like they had a little shopette and a cafeteria you could go to, and then we went to the mall. It was the main place we went to. They have a huge mall in, I guess it was just Kuwait City, uh-huh. And a really nice mall.
So
and we'd go there and just pal around.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Did you find that the people from Kuwait, were they friendly to you? Did they like you?
They don't really talk to you much.
They don't.
Some of them will. Some of them were nicer. They have this thing going on where they wear the turbans, you know,
yeah,
or whatever that's called, and they have colors and they're color coded to where I don't remember the colors, but I think they were like white and red, and then you had red and white, and that was like a status.
Uh-huh.
So I think it was the multicolored one, I believe it was red and white, and you would see them just if there was a line of people, they walked to the front. There was nothing you could say about it, and that's how the lines were organized, and then. I don't know where we stood in the thing because I would just stand there sometimes and I wasn't going to say anything. So they would come coming in. I was waiting.
Just cut right in front of you.
Yeah, they didn't mind much.
Yeah. Now, at this point in time when you were in Kuwait, were you still single or were you married?
I was single.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about the ladies at Kuwait? Did you see any? Was there any ladies out there? Did you talk to any at all?
No, not really. They're pretty conservative with mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And we weren't out enough to really get to know the community, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We were pretty much on base. They had some workers on base, and my wife was out there, and at the time, we weren't together, but she made real good friends with one of the ladies that was working at one of the little stores they had.
Uh-huh.
She sold coffee. She had a coffee shop inside of one of the whatever you want to call it, and they still talk. They'll message from time to time.
I'll be done, yeah. Hey, if you're just joining us, I have Landon Crawford with me. Been in the Army for 8 years and getting out and go to his next career. One thing that we talked about, you and I talked about, I want you to talk a little bit. You were in Japan. Tell me about Japan. Tell the listeners about your experience in Japan.
I love Japan. I was out there again.
What'd you love about it?
I loved all kinds of things about it. I was out there for 9 months, and their trains are something different. It's you can be anywhere in that country within 3 minutes walking. It's so organized. You get on your phone, you pull it out, it tells you exactly what train to get on, and it's insanely organized. The food was great. The sushi and how it was set up was different too. It wasn't like you don't go in, sit down. Everything about it was different. They had, a lot of them had conveyor belts, and you just take it off there, and they would whatever color plate you got was how much that plate costs. And so they run their country different, and that was really my first big taste of a big city. Also, so that was
what city were you in?
I was in Tokyo.
Tokyo.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's a pretty good sized city. Is that the biggest city in Japan?
I don't know if it's in Japan. Yeah.
Were the Japanese? Could they communicate with you?
They communicate. Most of them could get by with the amount of English
that we. Did they want to? Did they like you?
They were nice to you, but there were places you would go where they'd be like, "There's no whites allowed in here," and they were.
No whites.
Yeah. Which was fine. Because, like,
no, if you're black, you got in?
I don't know. I think it was more of an American thing. But but they were so nice about their racism that I almost felt bad for even asking. I was like, so it was the strangest thing. I didn't know.
Just they'd have a sign on the door, no whites.
But I couldn't read it.
All right. But why? They just didn't like you guys, huh?
Oh, like I said, they were nice enough, but it just depends. And most of them were bars. You would try to go into a bar, and they would be like, "There's no whites in this bar."
Oh.
Yeah, it wasn't like I was going to a 7-Eleven or something. They're okay. no whites. It was mostly bars.
Well, so. You know what? Having been in the bar business for 20 years, I can imagine, I understand maybe, you know, because a bunch of Marines come in.
That's what I'm saying. There was a lot of Marines around there, and like a lot of Marines, and every time you turned around, I was hearing something like, "Oh, the Marines did this."
They're fights causing trouble.
Yeah, the Marines.
So, would you recommend the listeners, anybody, if they want to take a vacation, to take a vacation in Tokyo?
I would.
You would?
I would go check it out just for. I don't know what I would do as a tourist there, but I'm sure you could find something to do because I got the luxury of basically living there. For 9 months and experiencing it. I was still working, but experiencing it, getting a different vibe of it. I had days to waste of just walking around and seeing what it's like. And
did you find it reasonably priced?
I thought it was very reasonably priced.
Okay.
Very reasonably priced.
Did you ever see any of the, I mean, did they have very nice accommodations, do you think, if somebody was to stay over there?
Oh, yeah. They had nice hotels.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Reasonably priced. Their hotels are very reasonably priced.
They are?
Yes.
Okay. Did you use American money or did you have to transfer?
We had transferred over.
Okay. Now, another place that you went to was Israel, right?
Israel, Gaza footprint, yeah.
Yeah. What was that like?
It was different. I spent most of my time there on the body of water because we were on the boats, but... Eventually, I was on that 73-foot boat that has no accommodations. That doesn't have a toilet or a place to sleep. So we
no toilet,
nothing.
What?
Yeah, there's nothing on there. So it's just a boat with an engine on it, ready to go. Got a flat bottom. And
I mean, I had a 24-foot runabout, and it had a toilet on it. You guys had nothing.
Nothing. Had an engine room and a deck and a helm. And had a roof over my helm.
What'd you do on that boat?
Well, in there,
we have guns on it.
This was strange. We had infantry guys out there and all that. And for whatever reason, I was one of the few people with a loaded gun. I don't know why, but they were like, "Yeah, those guys can't have it." But there was like 12 of us floating around with a gun, and somehow I ended up being one of them.
I'll be darned. Well, it was strange. But no artillery or anything.
I just had an M4. Just
normal. Yeah. So what was that boat for? What'd you guys do?
We were kind of like odds and ends kind of people. We were taking some equipment. A lot of what we were doing was transferring people. We had this, I wouldn't call it a cruise ship, but that's kind of what it was. It was a bad cruise ship, and that's what they were using to store people. They were keeping them there. That's where they were sleeping. And then so in the morning, I'd pull up and grab them. They'd get on my boat. I'd take them to the pier that was attached to Gaza, the Gaza Strip there, and drop them off. I'd pick up new people, and I would take them back.
When you say people, are you talking about service?
Soldiers. Okay. Soldiers, yeah.
And they would stay there?
Most of them were soldiers. We were hiring, because we couldn't go on land. That was our whole thing. We could not touch land in Gaza, which was, for whatever reason, that was what we were doing. And so we did have to pick up, I don't know who they were, but they were foreign, and they did not talk to us. But uh-huh. They would drive their semis, and that's who would pick us. We were just delivering food.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would pick up the food, drive their semis off. They weren't on my boat, but I would have to transfer them to a truck sometimes.
We hear on the news all the time about Gaza, and mm-hmm. all that. Give me your perspective on Gaza, some insight on Gaza and Israel.
Yep. I don't... My insight may not fit everybody else's insight, but
yeah. But what your view?
It was a very strange atmosphere. I had talked to a few of the Israelis, and they would get to talking, and they're just shooting children. They're just shooting. Yeah. Oh yeah. They don't care who you are. They're just shooting it. Anybody they come across. And I was talking to one of them, and I don't remember how we got there, but he's like, "Well, we got to shoot the children because that's just a future terrorist." And I'm talking to him, and I was like, I was worried about saying it, excuse me, because I didn't know if I was going to get in trouble. But I was like, that seems pretty ironic, given the whole Holocaust situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think you'd learn.
Yeah.
It doesn't have much to do with the children. And as a Jewish person, I think you would understand that. But who am I?
Yeah, but that's kind of what you experienced over there.
Yeah, I mean, I experienced a good bit over there. That was just one conversation. There were some very nice ones when we were in the port. Like I said, we were on that little boat.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have anything to go about. And all we had was those MREs. And the people that were working in the port, they would help us out. They'd bring us some food. They'd let us use their showers inside the port facility they had. So they were pretty nice about it.
So was that your last stop?
That was my last stop.
Yep. And then you came over. Did you come spend any time in the States as far as on a base or anything?
Oh, yeah. I was at Fort Eustis the majority of my career.
Okay.
And besides deployments, I didn't get to go anywhere else just because of the way my MOS is set up. We got to be by water. So they really only have one port for the Army boats in stateside. And they just recently opened up a main port in Japan to where now it's a PCS as opposed to a... whatever, just like a deployment.
So you and your wife are married, and you're in the Army, and you have kids, right?
Right.
So is she back home? Or what's her situation when you were in service?
She was going to stay in the Army, and then we had our first child, and then we got to talking about it. Excuse me. Got talking about it, and I was like, listen, I think you should get out of the Army and stay home with the kids because it's just a different ballgame.
Sure. Like,
if I leave and she's home with the kids. It's awful, horrible for her. I hate it. Wish I could be with her. But if she were to leave and leave me with the kids, boy,
yeah,
I don't know that I could handle it.
Yeah, it's probably the way to go. Now, where was she at?
She was same place, Fort Eustis. We had the same MOS.
All right. So
same job.
How often were you able to see the family?
Pretty often. Aside from deployments, it's pretty family-oriented. Like, they let you get your stuff done, and they keep you busy, but you don't get paid overtime in the Army, so they make up your overtime with days.
I see.
You know.
Now, you speaking of family, you come from a big family.
I do.
And you were telling me that that's not the case with a lot of people you run into in the service.
So growing up in this area, I don't think it's very uncommon to, you know, have a bunch of cousins and have a family around, and it was just eye-opening to me when I joined the Army and got to meeting people that I am part of the minority of people who have that know all their cousins and grandparents and are real close-knit like that, get together for Christmas and stuff. People don't.
They don't do that.
People do it. You know, yeah, I would run into them, but I'm the minority for
you
sure.
You are the minority.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I'd be the minority too.
I guess
too.
You were too. Yeah. You got a nice family yourself.
Yeah. Well, is there anything I would like for you to do this, if you could? We're about to wrap it up. I would like to give your pitch to any parents or kids or anybody thinking about the service. why it might be a good move.
Yeah, well, they take all of them, all shapes and sizes. Help me grow up. I would say that. I wouldn't said, I was a bad person going into it, but it helped me grow up. It's a very structured atmosphere. It's hard to mess it up. You got to try and mess it up.
Okay. The one thing that the concern is, because I kind of wanted, my kids to think about going in service. And Katie did do, she did actually do a little bit. But I know a mother gets concerned about their child getting killed or hurt in the service, being in maybe a war situation.
Sure.
Was that a concern with your group?
Well, it's something you got to keep in the back of your mind, I guess, because it is a possibility. But depending on the jobs you pick, you can pick a more, like if you go infantry, and that's even still not guaranteed that you're going to see any, gunfights, but your chances are higher of seeing battle. And if you're seeing battle, your chances are higher of getting shot. But if you pick a job, like say my job was more, I was in transportation. Mm-hmm. So we weren't hunting down bad guys, it would inherently dangerous, I wouldn't say.
Yeah. So now you're out, and what are you looking for now? What do you think? What do you want to get into?
I'm looking for a job, whoever's hiring. I'm trying to join the union, I guess, is my first stop. I did stay in the reserves, so I will be in the reserves.
Oh, you are?
Still. Yep.
Okay.
So figured doing the same job. It's up in Chicago. So I figured once a month, go to take a trip to Chicago. Worst things have happened.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think that'll be good for you.
I think so.
For sure. And I'm sure you'll get get hired onto a regular job somewhere
here. Yeah, just being patient.
Any certain area you're thinking about?
I would love to live in Jerseyville, but we'll see how that pans out. Okay. So,
but as far as any type of job, are you thinking like a trade of some sort?
I'm trying to get into line work right now.
Lineman?
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Oh, fingers crossed. We'll see how that works out.
Well, I think you'd be a good candidate for it.
I appreciate that.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for coming in. Thanks for your service to the country.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. And we'll see you around.